Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
Yeah, so do you feel fresh as a lemonade, a-sitting in the shade?
No, not today.
No, I don't either. But
I feel back, one that's shriveled up and fell off the tree.
You feel like a lemon that's been hung on the tree a little too long, huh?
Yeah.
Covered in frost? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now,
the joys of the wintertime cold.
Oh, boy, I got to tell you. Yeah, it's been a rough couple weeks. Yeah, it's everything good is happening, everything bad's happening. It's, well, everything mediocre.
Yeah, nothing real bad.
So, where are we going to start today?
Let's start on the river.
Okay.
It's been okay.
So, on the river, we're going to just kind of touch on the spot up there. When you go up the Peace River, go up and get past I-75, and the main channel curves to the right, makes a big swing around, you come out in front of Harbor Heights. Then as you're heading up the river, you're going to see an island in front of you. You want to go to the left of that island, and you're going to go through, and you'll come across the big power lines that cut them across the river there. And underneath those power lines, we're seeing some, what, little redfish, silver trout, a little bit of sea trout, but tarpon.
Yeah, some juvenile tarpon and some subadult tarpon, you know, from 10 to, say, 50 pounders. They've been scattered throughout the whole channel. You know, some of the guys are just slow trolling for them and picking up the oddball trout, the oddball tarpon, at least jumping them anyway.
Yeah, Kale's been doing some trips up there trolling the Storm Twitch bait. I think I would stay with the Storm Twitch and 15 Bomber SIG for trolling up there, one in one side and one on the other. But if I was going to cast, especially for those little tarpon, I'd take that mini DOA Terrorize.
Yeah.
I think that would be that or the cream fishy.
Yeah.
The cream, and we're using this little hook that they use for yellowtail snapper down in the Keys. Makes a nice little, really strong. You can do a crappie jig head, but you've got to back your drag off
way off.
And you need to have about 1 pound of pressure on that. Otherwise, you'll straighten out that little bent wire hook on the crappie jig.
Yeah.
But if you use the yellowtail snapper hooks with the little weight on them, you can still cast them, and you've got enough power on the hook to leave your drag in pretty much a normal setting.
Absolutely.
So that's what I would do on the river. What would you?
Yeah, I would do that, and then if you're working along, it wouldn't hurt to fish a lot of the docks over there because they are catching a few redfish along the docks and some under the bushes. Assorted sizes. Most of them are on the small side. Typical this time of year. If you have a bottom machine, a few guys have been finding a few redfish in some of those deep holes and just dropping some live shrimp or frozen shrimp down there and trying to jig them up.
And up around I-75, if you're one of the whiting brigade, there are some whiting in the deeper holes just before and after I-75. Not tremendous amounts, but you'll catch dinner.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but remember, pieces of shrimp are way better than live shrimp for that.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
If you don't want to buy a bag of frozen, just get a dozen or two live shrimp, but tear them in half. You know, you need pieces. They don't have teeth to tear up the shrimp with, so they're much more likely to bite on that. Coming up to 41, you were telling me about trout ladyfish. I took some a little bit of time to prep the house up for our company Christmas party, and
which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, we had a nice night.
It was wonderful.
Freezing cold.
Yes, it was.
Boy, it was cold. I had told Terry, if anybody's there by 10 o'clock, we had a great party. And we still had over 100 people at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I think we got upstairs about 2. Burned the last bit of that pallet. And, you know, we, of course, were toasting marshmallows to keep it legal. But, you know, you can't have a fire without cooking on it.
Right.
So, you know, but we burned up that, finally got rid of that big pallet. Now the only bad part is now I got to start cutting up more wood because I've only got a pile of real wood left there. I don't have any, like, you know, hardwood, you know, pine and all that stuff there. Andrew's coming down. He says he's going to get some lighter knots. And I know it's some kind of pine knot that burns. It's got a lot of pitch in it, but he's all looking forward to the New Year's Eve thing. So
nice. That'll be good to see him.
Yeah, him and Cliff are working together now.
Really? Yeah. He got on Cliff's crew?
He got on Cliff's crew, so, you know, they're, I guess, both going to be down here in the next week or two.
That'll be good.
So, anyway, some of the old pirate crew coming back. Let's see, what else is going on? 41, we were talking about sea trout and ladyfish.
Yeah. The snook bite's been slow. It's been weird down there this week, and I think it's because the tides have kind of reversed a little bit.
Okay, explain reversed.
The last 2 weeks, it's been a really good, strong incoming. Now it's been kind of a mediocre outgoing during the early morning hours and in the evenings. And for some reason, those fish kind of get in a weird pattern where they feed at a specific tide. And when they start to reverse towards the middle of the month, you know, because they always are going to shift anyway.
Right.
And right now it's in that funky mode. And I think plus the 2 weeks of cold weather that we had, now we've had 4 days of really beautiful, nice weather. Fish are kind of a little messed up.
Yeah, but it's still chilly at night. I don't think there's enough sun during the day to warm the water up.
No, it really hasn't.
I mean, the days are so short right now that, you know, it's hitting in the 70s during the day.
Right.
I don't think, you know, just as a thought, I wouldn't get up early and go fishing.
No.
I would get up, have my coffee, have a nice warm breakfast, then meander out, put stuff in the boat, and head out. But I'd want to be in good fishing by 9, 10 o'clock. I'd want to be on the water fishing and fish through to about 2, 3, 4 o'clock as that sun's still nice and warm for your ride back.
Yeah.
But after 4 o'clock, it starts getting a wee bit frosty. Yeah. If you're going to be out on the water before 9 a.m. or after 4, I would have a Fish and Frank's hoodie and a raincoat with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to rain. I mean, we're expecting a little bit of rain beginning of the week. But raincoats don't allow the wind to go through.
Exactly.
So when you're looking at it, you know, up north you always say layer, layer, layer. Down here what we got to do is break that wind. Now the Fish and Frank's hoodie will insulate you between you and the plastic of the raincoat. And a cheap plastic raincoat is the best windbreaker.
Because, absolutely.
You know, you can be running back and it's still 70 degrees out, but all of a sudden that sun dips just a little bit and you're right at sea level. You know, basically you're sitting 2 feet over sea level, and that humidity combined with that 25, 30 mile an hour wind, that drops that temperature, your core body temperature, because when you're sitting still, your body creates kind of like a little thermal layer around it when it's still and calm. And you actually stay warm, but when the breeze is blowing that body heat off, it drops your temperature significantly,
quickly.
Raises your heart rate. Amazing. I mean, your heart rate will go crazy. It's worse than riding a bicycle on a marathon, how it raises your heart rate. But, you know, a raincoat will solve those problems. And the Fish and Frank's hoodie, nice, soft, warm, comfortable. I'm going to boost our product there for a bit because we did. You did a great job on getting us some nice hoodies that are real soft and comfortable. But that will protect you from the cool of being in contact with the rain gear.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and they're both relatively light. But that's what you want to have if you're leaving early or if you're coming back a little later. The Fish and Frank's hoodie.
Should have that stuff with you anyway this time of year just for that. Well, if you break down, stuck on a sandbar.
Yeah, but you're kind of sitting still. Unless you got a lot of wind, you won't be in terrible shape. But, boy, I'll tell you what, when you're running, I can't tell you how many times in the morning I'd pick somebody up, and they just flew in from Michigan. It was 20 degrees out when they left home. And, you know, they show up on the dock because it's 60 degrees and shorts and shirt. And by the time we're a half, three-quarter mile away, I've got to give up my jackets because they were freezing because, oh, no, this is beautiful. This is gorgeous. I'm used to minus 20. No, Florida has the coldest 60 degrees in the world.
Yeah.
I've never been anywhere where 60 degrees feels like it does in Florida.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to the fishing, Port Charlotte canals.
the mouths of the canals are doing pretty good. The sheep's head are starting to move in a little bit at the mouths. Some, quite a few trout, assorted sizes, not big ones, but at least some legal fish. Mangrove snapper. I've even heard of a few oddball sand bream and an oddball flounder. There's also been some jacks moving around, but most of them are on the smaller side, except for some pretty darn big monsters over across the way. We'll talk about them in a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's been so beautiful the last 4 or 5 days, everyone's actually getting out, going out, right, and running around.
And the nice thing is, nobody's got to get up and be out there. Like 2 months ago, if you weren't on the water at daybreak, because right, you had from daybreak till 9 o'clock, maybe 10 o'clock to catch fish, and that was over.
Right.
So, and then you could go back out later in the night. But now it's reversed to that lazy guy fishing, and it's terrific because,
oh yeah,
this is the time of year where you relax, you take it easy, you come in, you get some bait, you can get a few dozen shrimp, you don't have to throw the cast net, and you're going to catch fish.
Absolutely.
So heading over to the Myakka, I know the Myakka cut off and has redfish in it, and there's a bit of snook. They're very lethargic with this cool weather, but they're still going to eat. And then
some
you
trout
get over
at the entrance right there on the Charlotte Harbor side of the Myakka.
And if you go over into the Myakka River proper, in the main body of the river, you've got a little bit of pompano, but more sea trout, I would say, than anything.
Yeah.
And Tippy Canoe's got sea trout in it. You get over closer to the middle of the river, you're going to find less fish, but bigger fish.
Yeah.
And a lot more fish as you get closer to the edges. But what's going on Elgin Bean? Anything?
Elgin Bean's been really pretty good. There's been some slow days there, but overall the consistency's been pretty good. The sheep's head are really starting to pick up there. Not the mammoths that a lot of guys are used to this time of year, but there's been some quality fish there. Trout bite's been fair during the daytime. There's even been some silver trout incidentally caught while they're trout fishing. Mangrove snapper. That's kind of about it. I mean, just a little mixed variety, but Eljo Bean's been pretty good.
And then coming down the west wall, you got a lot of fish to catch on the west side.
A whole lot of fish over there
right
now.
There's just gazillions of fish, but most of them are on the smaller side. You got a lot of rat reds.
Yeah.
And rat reds, by definition, are smaller, little. I mean, it rhymes, so I think that's how they got the name.
Right.
But, you didn't want to say tiny red fish. It doesn't sound as good. Or little red fish. So rat reds became the phrase. But they're anywhere from 8 to 14 inches, and there's gazillions of them. All you do, if you find a creek that has any kind of a deeper hole in it, and it's just loaded with them.
Yeah.
And again, I would use, this is the one time I use circle hooks.
Me too.
Pieces of shrimp, maybe a small regular size shrimp, not big shrimp because you miss too many fish, but regular shrimp, pieces of shrimp on a circle hook, about a number one, a 2-to-1 circle hook, and because those little redfish, I mean, they can see the bait.
They're voracious.
They bite, chew, swallow, digest, and start to poop before you can set the hook.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's almost impossible with a J hook not to gut hook those fish.
Right.
Now,
and I think it's because it's a competition thing because there are so many. I mean, it's not like your usual redfish where you pull up the bush and there's one or two or three, maybe. These are, 15, 20, 30 of them.
Or even more sometimes. And the thing about it is flatten the barb on your circle hook. Circle hooks are a nightmare to get out of fish. They are just a horrible, horrible release hook. But if you pinch the barb down, it does make it a little bit easier. Just flatten the barb on it. Don't crush it flat, but try and fold that point down a little bit because it's hard enough getting a circle hook out without having to deal with the barb on the hook. And
right,
these are catch and release fish. They're undersized. You cannot keep them. So lose the barb, flatten it down, and you'll have a good time with them. But don't leave the barb on that little circle hook for the redfish. It's not the right thing to do. Outside the bar, trout, some pompano.
Some trout and some pompano. That 3 to 4 feet of water is kind of a magic number right now. Pretty much all the way across the board for your trout. You're finding some bigger trout, a lot of little guys around, but they're scattered pretty good there.
Now, we're getting quite a few calm periods during the day and evenings and stuff and mornings, or whether it's calm enough you could throw topwater out there.
Absolutely.
What's your best pick?
Honestly, I would probably throw a Spook Junior.
Spook Junior? I'm going to go ahead and torpedo.
That's a phenomenal one.
No. Can be just, you know, no, the thing I like is it's an anybody lure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anybody can throw it. I mean,
it's a no-brainer lure. I mean, you don't have to finesse it. You just reel it.
Yeah, you don't have to learn how to walk the dog and do all that stuff that required with a spook.
Right.
And the spook is the elite of the top waters. You know, you've got to know what you're doing with it to catch fish. But head and torpedo, just jerk it. Just give a pull and make it splash and make it stop, and it'll catch fish. But
yeah.
Let's go down to Cape Hayes.
Cape Hayes has been doing pretty good. Quite a few pompano down there on the bar. A lot of bonnet heads moving around on there. Been an occasional flounder or two. A few redfish. It's been kind of hit or miss on them, but, I mean, bonnet heads and the pompano have been the real big thing down there right now. And then along the trough there, you're getting, you know, oddball mangrove snapper, oddball redfish that are moving in and out, but they're not staying for very long.
And now, Bulbay and Turtle Bay are very, very similar right now.
Yeah.
And if you're looking to go into Bulbay or into Turtle Bay, you know, from the big straight side there, the one thing I would stop and do before I got in is pompano.
Absolutely.
I would try for pompano before I went up in to look for trout or redfish or anything. There's enough fish outside those openings. Yeah. And they don't seem to go up into the openings. They seem to hang, you know, 100 feet out or so from the openings of the bays, but there's quite a few fish there.
Yeah, working that whole basically front shoreline from, say, the main entrance into Turtle all the way over to the main entrance of Bull, even over towards Kaopolo.
If you're going up and you're catching trout, you're too close.
Right.
The trout are going to hang out in the opening itself. You're going to find your trout right there. But if you've catch trout, go back out a little further. Go back another 100 feet, 150 feet out and try for the pompano out there.
Yeah.
But if you're into the trout, you're a little too close. Now, if you go up into either Bull or Turtle Bay, just get in the middle and drift. Always make sure when you're drifting there, you have your motor in its lowest position, because you want the motor to catch first. You don't want to be drifting along and all of a sudden there you are aground.
Yeah.
If your motor's in its lowest position, it usually protrudes, I would say, about 8 to 12 inches below the bottom of the boat.
Yeah.
So that gives you 8 to 12 inches of still floatable water when it snags.
Right.
And all of a sudden, boom, motor catches, boat starts turning. All you got to do is reel in, put your rods up, raise the motor and back out of there and get back into the deeper water and head up against the wind and make your drift again. So nice, easy, safe. Now, if you're going up for the redfish that are back there, you're going to try and hang the shorelines. You really got to work the shorelines a little bit more.
Right. But
are they right up underneath the trees now, or are they?
A lot of your rat reds are, and then there's been a few legal fish up under the bushes or right along the edges of the bushes, but it seems like most of those, like 16 to 22 inch redfish have been hanging out just off the bushes in some of those little sand pockets and in that little trough.
Yeah, a lot of the area, when you come off the mangroves, it kind of slopes, the ground slopes down, and then for some reason it's formed like a ditch, and it'll run parallel to the shore, and that's where those keepers seem to be hanging out. And we call it troughs, but it basically, picture a little ditch in your mind, and that runs parallel to the shoreline. That's where you're going to find more of those, the snook, the redfish, more your keeper-sized fish. Now, snook's out of season right now, but, you know, they're are a tremendous amount of fun to catch and release.
Absolutely.
And
the guys are catching them on quite a variety of stuff. I mean, they're catching them on popping corks with, you know, like the DOA shrimp, like the deadly combo that you usually use for trout. They're catching them on that. They're catching them on a variety of soft plastics. That Storm Twitch Stick has been creaming them. And then also cut pinfish and cut ladyfish have been working fairly well,
Isn't
too.
Isn't it amazing how it gets cold and you chop the fish up into pieces and it becomes much better bait? A month ago, it was all about the live bait.
Right.
And now you're looking at shrimp, cut bait, and the water's chilly. And picture yourself. I mean, when the temperature's prime, you're going to run around and you're going to jog down to the place and get something. But right now, you just kind of stand and you kind of walk real short steps, and you get real, your arms are real close to your body, and you're just like hugging everything, going, this is just too cold to move around.
Yes.
And I think that's the way the fish get. It can get too hot, too cold.
Yeah.
And our water, when it hits in the 60s, that's cold for our fish.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like in the middle of winter up north. You can catch fish, but you've got to slow everything down.
Like this, this water temperature right now for the average person up north, they're looking for all the pre-spawn bass and pre-spawn walleye that are feeding like, piranhas. Normally in this water temperature, but for us, they forget that our fish are tropical.
Right.
This is, cold is definitely by far a relative term, and they kind of laugh at us that we're bundled up. They kind of laugh at us when we tell them the water temperature is chilly right now for the fish. They're still relating it to their walleye or their bass that they're used to catching. And
they don't get it, and you can always tell when somebody starts to get it, because they start to understand that different areas, different temperatures affect everything differently. And you notice it when they stop saying up home and start saying up north.
Right.
That's when about everything starts to kick in. But as long as they're still saying up home, they're not getting it. As soon as they start saying up north, up north instead of saying up home, that's about the time when everything kicks in. It's like when little kids start fishing. They can actually catch fish at 3 years old, 4 or 5. But with little boys, somewhere between 5 and 6 is when it actually starts kicking in. Little girls actually a little younger. I would say more around 5, a little before or after they're 5 years old, about a year before the boys. But with the boys, they kind of do it. And then between 5 and 6 is when they either they get hardcore or they're on to something else.
Yeah.
But you can tell the ones that are into it because, boy, they get into it.
Absolutely.
And it's always between 5 and 6 years. That's why we built that one fishing pole, the early angler models.
Yeah.
Mike, who's a magician up in Michigan, and helped me name those rods. But I think it was Mike. Could have been. I don't know. Anyway, but they're rods that are made for kids when they leave Snoopy and not ready for an adult rod.
Yeah.
That was the one thing we could never find, a good rod for snook, redfish, trout, all these, nice sized fish that we have.
Right.
But short enough for a kid, but still has a lot of power. And that was always a difficult one to find. So we made them. We have the early angler rods and black for the boys and pink for the girls. Because there was just nothing available.
None of the manufacturers know how to do it.
Well, I always said,
they always put a picture on there and say that this is for youth. Just because you put pink highlights on it or blue highlights on it doesn't make it for youths.
Well, it's fine if you're doing bluegills and crappies or sunfish or something like that. But most of those rods are so wussy, they won't handle a snook or a redfish and give the kid any kind of control.
Exactly.
So we actually made those for the kids. And I'm always we'll probably, even though I'm not really planning on doing many more of our own rods, because there's so many rods coming out nowadays.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep the early angler series and probably the women's rods, the women and the kids' rods, because we've got so many rods for guys. That new Penn's got out a bunch of new rods this year, and you can come in and buy a pretty darn nice, nice, $39.
Yeah.
You can get yourself a beautiful Penn rod.
Kind of scary nice, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think Penn could have easily got $69, $79 for it, but $39 is a good buy.
Yeah.
And so there's so many rods available now. I'm probably going to be backing out of making our rods for a while, just because there's so many rods for us available.
Right.
Women and kids, there's not that many rods available for, not with colors.
Right.
But for the guys, Penn's done a phenomenal job. Star has so many rods. But Star doesn't, I think they're $70 is about where you begin with Star.
Correct.
But Penn, you can get into, the $40, $39.
Even the Daiwa stuff, there's a couple of those that are pretty
darn good. We got $18 Daiwa rods that are actually nice rods.
Yeah.
$18, you can get a nice rod. We got the Berkeley rods that start off at, they're like $20, $24. Like And we got a Zebco for $9 if you, you know, really want an inexpensive rod.
Absolutely.
But, it, you know, Shimano, since they took the warranty off, in-store warranty off the rods, we don't carry a lot of Shimano rods right now. But reels, you can buy reels. We've got a Shimano reel, brand new, in the box. Brand new, $10.99.
Yeah.
And the weirdest part about it is, I think it lasts longer. It's actually a better reel than their $19 and $20 reels.
I think so.
Now, I would go from that $10.99 reel up to the Sienna. Yeah. Now, the Sienna is a great buy at $30.
It's just that an unbelievable
mid-$20 reel from Quantum, the optics, which is the optics and the Quantum optics and the Shimano Sienna are the two best, you know, reels for the money, in that low dollar, $25 to $30. You know, they're just amazing reels for that amount of money. Absolutely. Lasts forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, you guys don't care about all that, but let's go back. Gasparilla tailing flats from Kaopalu, heading over towards Widden Creek, Catfish Creek.
A lot of trout. Quite a few sheepshead running over there.
Really?
Yeah, imagine that.
Trout on the flats out there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's unusual.
Yeah. I mean, that's. Yeah. I hope you caught the sarcasm in my voice.
Yeah.
Yes. But
there's also been some sheepshead moving around over there by the clam fields and those couple oyster bars that are right there and heading towards into Widden Creek.
Oh yeah, between Kaopalu and Sandflying down there.
Yeah. There's also been quite a few small bull sharks up in that area, like little guys, like 3 and 4 footers. Danny was talking about them this morning. He went through one spot, and I don't remember where he didn't specify where he was at, but he said one area where he was in, he saw 15 in about the 2.5 to 3.5 foot range. You know,
it's amazing that many little bull sharks here in this cooler weather. You think they would have head to the Keys by now?
Well, I think the juveniles stick around here off and on throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
Know, until they get sizable enough where they can become the major part of the food chain rather than the low end of the food chain.
Yeah, because there's surprisingly enough, I always thought big sharks were the only predators that small sharks have, but the Goliath grouper eat them.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
I mean, when I saw the first
Flipper will wreck them too on a little guy.
Oh, yeah, dolphins, Goliath grouper. They have more predators than I would have thought.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
an alligator, for that matter, if they get back there in some of that shallow water in those back creeks.
A gator would do a good job on a shark, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's just funny. You don't think of sharks having real predators, but I'm still absolutely astounded. It always just blows my mind. I mean, poof, brain gone. When you see a grouper eat a live 3 or 4 foot shark.
Yeah.
What is the stomach lining of that fish like? I mean, I can't hardly.
Better yet, how strong is his crusher in the back of his throat where he feels that confident where he's going to wreck that animal before he hopefully swallows it?
Because I can barely control one, and I'm an average size guy, my late 50s, but I'm still moderately strong. But even in my 30s and 40s, a 4 or 5 foot shark
hurts.
You got a hand on the back of his head and a hand on his tail. You can't really keep him from undulating, you know, from moving.
You can't hold him still.
You can't hold him still. I mean, you got to use your body weight and your muscles to hold him still.
Yeah.
And in my 40s, I was pretty powerful. And to be able to just grab him and swallow it whole. Wow.
Yeah. That's a trip.
Oh, yeah. Freaks me out. I'm just telling you, freaks me out. I can't even imagine putting a live shark in your stomach.
No.
You know, I'm not going to swallow a goldfish. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit of a wuss that way. I did it when I was young, but I couldn't do it now. But the thought of a live shark, oh, my God.
No. No.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
Okay. Anyway, we talked about a lot of trout there on the flats from Kaopalu, Devilfish going over towards Catfish and Widden Creek. How's Catfish doing in Redfish? It was just off the hook a little while ago, just crazy good.
There's been some bigger ones over there, but it's mainly the rat reds have really moved in hardcore over there.
Yeah.
You got to work and move along the bushes and stay in just on the outside edges of the bushes to get your, you know, and they're barely legal. They're like 18, 22 inch range. A few guys are seeing some bigger bull reds moving around.
All of a sudden, I just got chilly. I don't know. I was sitting here all relaxed and comfortable, and then all of a sudden, I was like, man, a little cold. My coffee's got cold, too. Yeah, I need to make a fresh pot. But I'm out of water. I got to go buy some water. So, yeah, no water up there. All right. Anyway, Placida Trestle, sheephead.
And more sheephead.
This is, if you like that, you know, if you're into that nice, tasty dinner, now's the time to get out to the Trestle. You don't need a boat. You don't need anything fancy. You can do it with a stick and a string, for God's sakes, because you're fishing straight down.
Yeah.
And wrap some fishing line around a Coke bottle, drop it straight down with a sinker on it, and you're going to catch some sheephead there.
Yeah.
But remember, the whole casting thing is not conducive to good sheephead fishing.
No. You They're all right under your feet.
So, you know, this is the time of year literally where you can wrap some line around a Coke bottle, drop it straight down, and still have good fishing.
Yeah.
So, Placida Trestle, there's...
And they're not super leader shy either. They are great bait thieves, but they're not super leader shy. It surprises me with the different leaders, varieties of stuff that the guys are using.
Braided line leaders. I mean, people use everything on them, and they still catch fish.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
But you got quite a few small sharks around that area right now.
Some bonnet heads, a few oddball black nose I've been hearing about.
Yeah, that whole black tip type.
Yeah.
And
over the next week or so, you may see a few oddball bigger sharks come through as they follow these mullet coming in, because the mullet did run offshore at the end of last week, beginning of this week. So you may start to see.
I had a diabetes pill this morning, so I'm going to eat a little bit of chocolate, warm up.
Perfect. So. There's been, you'll see possibly the sandbars or the bull sharks moving in close to the beaches or even into the passes and the harbor for that matter. Okay. It's not something you can readily target, but it's worth
I've been on the meds being ready for it. The last week or so, not because I really need them, but at this time of year, we are so fortunate. People bring us cupcakes and cookies and all this stuff. And as long as I'm on my meds, I can have a little bit of the sugar and all that stuff. Right. You know, I don't usually...
As long as you're watching it.
Yeah, I don't take the medication because I don't eat much junk food anymore. I just quit doing it. But this time of year, you know, this is a great time to take your medication because you're going to cheat.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And the food, these treats that the people are bringing us are just absolutely amazing.
Oh, I don't...
I mean, we got...
I wish I knew the guy's name who brought that pumpkin log with the cream cheese in it.
Jim Ingram's neighbor. I told him to get us a recipe. He's like two houses down across the street from Jim.
I owe that
guy. I was
guy.
Talking to Jim the other day about it, and he's like, we got one of those. This is my neighbor across the street. He brought us one. I'm like, oh,
Nicest guy. I mean, brought us this. It's like a cake, and they roll it up with cream cheese frosting inside.
And it was the perfect
sweetness. Oh, I was so glad I was on
sweetness.
My meds.
Perfect sweetness.
And it wasn't overly sweet. You could taste the cream cheese. There wasn't a lot of sugar in it. And it's like we had that Publix cake a while back, cream cheese dressing. It was perfect. We got the one after that, my birthday cake, and it was too sweet.
Right.
But, oh, my God, that guy makes – that is the best dessert.
Absolutely.
I know it doesn't sound like much. It's pumpkin cake with cream cheese frosting in it. But, I mean,
everything about it was perfect.
I overate. I ran my blood sugar. I knew it. Two pieces too many. I said, that's it. I'm going to run my A1Cs up. I don't care. This could kill me, but I'm going to die happy.
Right.
I was amazing. Anyway, we're heading up the intercoastal. Sorry about that, boys and girls. You know, sick people. We always got to talk about our diseases and stuff, you know. But right out front.
To it as poor Charlotte.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it? You get old, you know, when you're young. You could be dying, and you'd be like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, you get old, you know. But what else do we got to talk about?
Exactly.
I mean, we're not running around drinking and partying, and we're not doing, you know, all these crazy things.
That's what caused you to get sick nowadays and have to go to the doctor.
Yeah, I know. Okay, anyway, some nice fish. If you're putting in a Placida at the boat ramp, go right out through the mouth, and if you go to the left or right there, and just cast a lure or a DOA deadly combo, and cast out, reel in, or pop the combo, and you're going to catch trout right there. And there's a variety of other small fishes right there, right out in front of the boat ramp. And whether you...
And an incredible number of lizard fish in there.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of guys are talking about all the lizard fish they're catching wild. They're catching trout. I forgot to tell you about that earlier with the fishing report. The lizard fish have kind of moved in big time up there in the intercoastal. Even a couple guys catching them over there by Burnt Store. Not really? Many, but enough where they're talking about them. But the intercoastal, I've heard a lot of lizard fish lately.
And it's kind of cigar shape, but they have the head of a lizard.
Yeah, and a lot of little teeny tiny needle teeth.
Oh, yeah, a lot of teeth. And their head is kind of arrow-shaped, I would say.
Yeah.
And then it goes down to a slender body.
And the scales are almost keeled. It's not a super smooth, slimy fish. It's got a little texture to it when you grab a hold of them.
But what the amazing part about it is they're not tall like a bluegill or anything.
Oh, no. And they're shaped just like a cigar.
Yeah, they're very symmetrical. But then you got that triangle head on it, and it opens up, and it seems like the whole front of their face opens up, and there's nothing but teeth in there.
Yeah.
And they're very cool little fish. Great grouper bait.
Great snook bait.
Great snook bait. I wonder what the edibility of a lizard fish is. I've never checked into it.
I don't know. I'm sure they're probably edible, but I'll bet you there's a lot of little bones.
It could be. But I'm going to check into that because they are becoming more and more popular or populated.
Yeah.
Not popular or populated. And whenever we start catching a lot of fish, I always like to see what the edibility of it is.
Yeah, they don't
get a lot of people are starting to eat ladyfish nowadays.
Yeah.
And they do have quite a bit of bones in them, but you can pickle them and or even deep fry the bones into edibility. Yeah. So
they're making like fish patties out of them, almost like salmon patties and stuff like that.
Yeah, grinding them up. So there's a lot of neat stuff. Have checking the edibility of lizard fish. I have no idea, really.
Yeah, so just don't expect a giant one. I think the world record's like 2 pounds.
Right.
And that stood for like a long time.
That's 8 inches is a normal lizard fish.
Yeah. Yeah, that 2 pound record, I want to say it's 20 years old. It's an old record.
Old record, yeah. Let's see.
The trout have been
lemon bag.
Yeah, the trout have been out at the ends of all the docks that are over there because there's a lot of long docks that come off the shoreline there. Hi. And then there's been a few redfish, a few pompano underneath the docks as you're working along there. So just kind of randomly blind cast under the docks, live shrimp, frozen shrimp, soft plastics. It really doesn't matter. Don't be surprised if you happen to pick up an incidental flounder because there've been it's been probably one of the slowest flounder years I've heard in a long time, but there's still enough around where don't be surprised if you get into a couple.
If I was going to look for flounder along the coast, walking along shore, it's going to be incidental, but I think if you got out towards Mary's, the Power Pole, any of these, but not on the reef. The reason you don't catch many of them while you're out there is they're not on the structure.
Right.
They're out away from the structure. You'd have the structure, then you'd have gag grouper, then you would have flounder out past that.
Correct.
And
they get around all that washboard bottom where that current starts to change and swing around those reefs and creates a good gravelly bottom or shelly bottom and a lot of washboard.
Yeah, that's like what you're looking for there. All right. Anyway, speaking of that, Venice, the jetties up there.
Jetties have been doing real good. Pompano, real nice sheep's head. The mangrove snapper bites slow down a little bit, but they're catching some a little better quality ones, 12, 14 inchers.
You're going to catch a lot of sheephead and a few snappers, but snappers are going to be better quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like I said, the pompano right there off the jetties and also just around the corner along the beach there has been pretty good. I mean, this whole week the pompano guys have been ranting and raving about what they've been doing from the jetties, the nearshore passes, and up and down the beaches. And obviously they're moving around a lot, so one day, there's an abundance of them, and the next day it's only a couple incidentals, but there's enough out there where it's worth either walking and fan casting and working at it, because you're going to catch some other stuff too.
All right.
The whiting have been out there, some few sheep's head, a few oddball trout,
So let's drift our way out into the Gulf. The craziest thing, I mean, every once in a while you hear about some really unusual stuff, and there's some pretty unusual things out there right now.
Yeah. Getting into this time of year, you never know what you're going to run into, especially when you get several weeks of really windy, nasty weather. The fish start
trying to cue Robert. I'm making facial gestures.
Yeah. One of our customers, Donnie, he's loves kingfish and mangrove snapper, and that's what he really loves to go after. He was out a couple weeks ago in that really bad weather in 3 and 4 footers, about 65, 68 feet of water. He caught his biggest king of his life. I think it was 56 or 58 inches. Super excited about that, along with a couple smaller ones. But then he hooked into another fish that they thought was going to be another giant kingfish. Get it up, and it was a 40-plus inch tuna. But instead of being a blackfin...
Now, we catch tuna here on a fairly regular basis, right?
Right, yeah, blackfin.
So the blackfin is kind of a normal catch. It's not really that unusual. Not regular, but not uncommon at all.
Right. This one ended up being a big-eye tuna.
Now, how do you distinguish a big-eye tuna?
Honestly, looking at the book, I'd have to look at, again, the caudal fin is a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Which are the fins towards the back, towards the tail. It's a little larger. And instead of having the more predominant black back to them, it's a little bit more of a bluish black.
Gotcha.
That's the
now,
only
is
thing.
The eye bigger?
I'd have to see them really in person. Looking at the book, no, it doesn't really look any bigger. But tuna have giant eyes to begin with.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I was just kind of curious because, you know, I've got to look it up. I should know all this stuff, and years ago I did. But, you know, radiation treatments and all the rest of this other stuff kind of left the brain where it's all in there. It's just hard to find
right.
Sometimes. But
I've heard of big eye tuna over in the Atlantic and even down in the Keys on occasion. I honestly didn't really realize they came into the Gulf. And according to the books, it's a fairly common tuna in the Gulf. You know, they're kind of Gulf and Atlantic. Most of your tuna in general are kind of in demise. So they're going to come through semi-regularly and sporadic. I'm sure there's certain times of year where they're more prolific than others. But that was really, really cool to hear about that. You know, and obviously this time of year, you never know what you're going to run into when you got the mullet going out there to run. A lot of these sharks meet them out there and follow them closer to shore, so there's a possibility of a tiger. Your sandbars will move in closer. Never know what kind of weird critters you could run into, but a lot of guys aren't really running out that far right now since groupers all closed in federal waters. Even the AJs are closed in federal waters now, too, so...
No, isn't it true that the ahi is... The big eye is actually one of the ahi-type tunas?
Yeah, ahi's just the Hawaiian name for tuna.
Mm-hmm.
It's their general generic term for them.
Right.
And ono is wahoo, I believe. You know, so it's like in the restaurants and stuff... You never know what kind of real tuna it is. Half the time it's yellowfin tuna. It could be albacore. All of your tunas have an edibility rate to them. Even bonita. You know, if they're fresh, they're incredible. They're not a blackfin or anything like that,
no,
but they are edible.
They are edible.
Enough where you're not going to gag yourself. I mean, I definitely would rather eat that than a ladyfish personally.
Yeah.
Not that that's saying a whole lot.
You really got to bleed them, though.
Cause yeah.
The only time I've really enjoyed eating bonita is when I was a commercial fisherman. We're out there. You catch him, and while he's on the side of the boat, the mate would take the meat off right then and put it right in the pan.
Right.
And
while it's still quivering.
Yeah, that was really good eating.
Yeah. There's a couple interesting recipes out there, and I've heard guys really enjoy it. Tom Kasser's ex, he's tried a couple of the recipes on them, and they're not too bad. But he's also a pretty phenomenal cook, so it wouldn't surprise me.
And
he could probably make a shingle taste fine.
And that was, to me, Tom made a sausage and peppers for our party. Wow. Casper's ex is the bomb. I mean, that guy can cook.
Yeah, it was really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're out there on those reefs, you know, the guys that have been really pounding it pretty good have been staying in that 3 to 12 mile range, getting a lot of mangroves, some good lanes, quite a few porgies, some sheep's head. Like you were saying, the occasional flounder have been around. But I've also had some good reports of some margates this past week. I've had several people come in with pictures of margates or tell me about the margates. They've caught like up to 5 pounds, which is kind of interesting for them being that close. you know, usually it's not a super common fish, I guess, but it's not uncommon. But usually they're out there in that 60, 80, 100 feet of water more often than inshore.
Right.
Haven't heard much about any kings. All the triple tail that are out there along the crab trap buoys, cause a couple guys have been running them this week with how nice it's been. They're seeing an occasional big one, but they've got lockjaw. The only ones that seem to want to cooperate and play are the little guys that are undersized. And not very many of them by any stretch of the imagination. as you get in closer to the passes, right there along Boca Grande Pass, Captiva Pass, they've been getting some pompano right along the edges of the drop-off. A few flounder, a lot of sheep's head in the middle of the passes. And red grouper is still in season in state waters. You don't catch a lot of them, but they have been getting some legal size ones in.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll be out in just a few minutes.
There's been that was nice.
Getting a birthday wish. That was nice.
That was real nice. The sheeps have been moving in and out of there throughout the whole passes too, and then the phosphate dock is obviously pretty well loaded with the sheep's head. The Boca Bay docks over there, on the backside of Boca Grande, they've got a lot of sheep's head, a few pompano, oddball mangrove snapper. And mangrove snapper bites seem to be sporadic in the passes. Good, bad, it's hopscotching all over the place.
So, not to put you in a different vein, if you were going to walk the beaches, say in Sanibel or you know, any of the islands out there, and what would you expect to catch if you were walking along the beaches from Gasparilla Island down to Sanibel?
Pompano would probably be my most sought-after targeted fish. I like throwing those little banana jigs or crazy jigs, whatever you want to call them. Tipped with a piece of shrimp usually increases your chances of a variety of stuff, but even working them by themselves, they're pompano jacks. There's been some juvenile or baby permit mixed in with those pompano. If you tip it with the shrimp or a piece of fish bite, something just to give it a little added flavor, the whiting will cream it. Some redfish will eat it. Obviously, the jacks are going to hit it. You know, kind of a mixed variety, but I mean, that would be my primary bait that I would be throwing just because of how diverse of species I can catch on it. You know, it's kind of like that twitch stick, how many different fish hit that thing. Those little right. Banana jigs out there on the beach, it's pretty much a no-brainer. And you can drag it, you can bounce it, you can fast retrieve it, moderate retrieve it, you can change things up to find out where those fish are kind of hanging at in the water column and along the surf. So I think that's what I like about it the most. There's still been a few snook out there too, even though it's super cold. There are still a few snook out there moving around on the beach. They're not cooperating, but getting a few here and there for catch and release purposes. So you might get excited by that. Good news is if you hook one out there, you're always in open water, so just use a lighter drag, you know, because usually you're using lighter leader material, you know, 20 or 25 pound test for that beach fishing. Just loosen your drag up. Let them run a little bit. I mean, not a big deal.
Well, there is so many things to do right now, and South Florida is just amazing for its, you know, variety, different ways to go, different things to go. But speaking of that, is there much difference right now if you're fishing Manasota Key or Venice down towards Sanibel?
Nothing. They're almost virtually identical. If you're along the intercoastal, yeah, Pine Island Sound is definitely a little bit more fishy right now because of how topographically diverse that is, I guess. I mean, you go from 1 foot to 10 foot to 1 foot to oyster bars to gravel to sand shell to, I mean, there's so many different ranges of habitat down there that it's...
I just looked something up. Number one fish seafood thing sold, shrimp. Shrimp's the number one... things sold seafood wise. Salmon is number two, canned tuna number three, tilapia number four, pollock number five, Pangaeus, that I think that's
Pangaea.
Pangaea, that's that Oriental grouper.
No, it's a catfish from Thailand, I believe.
Okay. Cod?
Thailand or Vietnam.
Okay. Cod, catfish, crabs, clams. You know, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. The shrimp doesn't surprise me being number one.
No.
I mean, and they're probably grouping that all into one lump thing where it's freshwater and saltwater shrimp. It's probably just a shrimp is a shrimp to them.
If you go back to 2010, that's it was shrimp, canned tuna, and then salmon. Salmon has since taken the sales of tuna, I think because of the controversies over, you know, catching dolphins and stuff with it. They kind of dropped the sales of the tuna down.
Well, and they've also perfected destroying entire ecosystems by raising salmon in harbors and stuff now.
Yeah, they're destroying everything with that. That's absolutely...
It's like 3 pounds of bycatch for every 1 pound of commercial raised salmon.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a good...
The amount of pollutants that are released from it just kills off the entire area.
Yeah, yeah, it's not what you good as you would think it is. But anyway, I was just kind of curious because you had shrimp, salmon, canned tuna, tilapia, pollock, whatever that
Pangasia.
Was. Cod, catfish, crab, and clams. And back in 2007, it was shrimp, canned tuna, salmon, pollock, tilapia. Tilapia's, you know, overtaken pollock. Then the catfish, crab, cod, clams, and flatfish was big in 2007.
Really?
Yeah.
Wonder what they're considered a flatfish. Probably halibut.
Flounder, halibut, stuff like that. Right. But I think the catch has gone down so much.
Sole, I think, is the other one. That's a real, that used to be a real popular one. That's right. A flatfish.
So it's not even in 2010 flatfish isn't listed. It was last time it was listed was 2007.
Wow.
So anyway, just odd and assorted stuff. You know, you don't expect to hear, don't want to hear while we're doing a radio show, but you're going to hear it anyway.
Hey, it's useless knowledge.
Yes. So anyway, let's get up Coosa-Hatchee. We got some trout down there.
Trout are doing real well down there.
I haven't heard anything about pompano down there.
I haven't heard much about pompano. I'm sure they are there, just with the numbers we're seeing around here. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
What about St. James City? What's going on down there?
St. James City, all around St. James City, Ponderosa, the backside of Captiva,
Sanibel,
that is unbelievable with the trout right now. The trout are scattered throughout there. Small ones, big ones.
I wonder if I'd light my desk on fire if I'd warm up. It's made out of wood. It'll burn.
Isn't that your sweater over there?
No, that's not mine. I have no idea. I thought it was yours.
No.
Okay. My Fish and Frank's hoodie's in my truck. So
it's a long ways out there.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, a lot of trout on the flats, some redfish.
Some bonnet heads. A few pompano scattered along there in some of those deeper sand holes. Captiva Rocks has got some pompano, some real nice trout around it. You know, I've heard about a couple now. I heard it from Mallory and Andrew at the beginning of the week. Their little man caught a true baby hammerhead.
Really?
I've had 4 now this past week reports, 2 of which were saw swimming around down there in Pine Island. And one was over on the east side, and theirs.
Well, you got to
little guys though, only like 24 inches
this year's.
Which, yeah, but this year's, but like have to be late this year's because usually they give birth in May.
Well, I wonder
and
if
they're born 24 inches long.
So maybe the sharks are doing what several other species have done. Once their numbers start to dwindle, they start having more offspring. They start spawning more.
Maybe. Maybe.
Because I was talking to somebody about the bait fish, because we've had bait fish crisis going on. I mean, actually, to the point where I'm actually worried about it. And one of the biologists said, well, you know, and it could be that it could be a very real thing, but in the case of a fish in South America that used to spawn once a year is now spawning 3 times a year.
Wow.
Trying to keep up to how much other numbers are being depreciated, they've actually started spawning more and more and more. And $9.35. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. I mean,
so and the hammerheads could be doing that too. They might be doing a double spawn now.
Could be. I doubt it because they take like 6 to 8 months for gestation period.
Yeah, but if you figure,
but
that's right on key with May. If they got pregnant in July, August, September, October, November, December.
Yeah, that's probable. The other possibility is that you're getting some younger fish are becoming a little bit more sexually mature a little more sooner. Mm, you know, so
could be.
I don't know. It's just one of those oddball things. You know,
but according to your timeline, it fits.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, because, I mean,
odd.
Everything wants to survive.
Yeah. You know?
And yeah. So, oh, Jiminy. Matt Lachey, a lot of sheephead underneath the bridges there on Matt Lachey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, coming up around Two Pines, you got a lot of pompano outside the bar.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of trout back in on the flats. You got snook, you got redfish. There's all kinds of fish back there around the Two Pines area.
Right. But over there across the way at Boquilla.
I was just going there myself.
That's been good. There's been phenomenal trout over there. Some better quality fish. A lot of little ones, but there's a whole lot of big ones. If you're just drifting those deeper grass flats at 4 to 6 feet of water, anywhere around those two big sandbars, I guess they are.
Yeah, the two
anywhere around
islands.
The edges around those have been holding some good quality fish. And then there's been some big bull reds swimming through there too. So the guys have been catching those as an incidental catch while they're trying for their trout. A few oddball pompano, bonnet heads. It's been a pretty fishy area, and that place is so huge and fairly consistently deep all the way up to the shoreline.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of nice. So you got a lot of area and a long ways to drift without having to worry about
big
getting stuck.
Big redfish in the deep water there, I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Some, you know, the guys are catching them while they're drifting for trout under popping corks.
So, and I mean, these are not, I mean,
36, 38 inchers.
So you're drifting along, you know, with your trout tackle, you better bring a little bit of extra patience with you, because
yes.
if all of a sudden you're catching 2-3 pound trout and then all of a sudden you hook up with a 20 pound redfish,
this
could
is fun.
Get, yeah,
absolutely.
So
fun,
just
especially if you're
relax.
Using the right tackle for trout.
Yeah, relax and take your time. You'll get them, but as soon as you get in a hurry, you're going to be screwed.
Yeah,
you've got to let that fish, you know, give it time. It's, you know, 10 times the size of the fish you caught just a second ago.
Yeah.
And it's the same leader, the same hook, the same rod, the same reel, the same tackle, you know. So just, you know, settle in and enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the hard part. People tend to get so involved in bringing the fish up the boat, they forget to. That's the moment you were there for.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the reason.
What's the hurry to get them in?
Yeah, just relax, take your time, and enjoy the whole thing. And it'll
especially
take you a little
this
bit longer
time of year,
on
water's
that.
Colder. They don't need as much time to resuscitate.
No, yeah. you can, you know, just resuscitate the fish. Don't worry about playing them too long. Get them and get the hook out, release the fish, you know, take your time reviving them. But this is the time, drifting that flat down there at Jug Creek. Great time to,
yeah, Jug
you know,
Creek's another really good spot.
What's that?
Jug Creek's another really good spot.
Yeah. I mean, that whole area out there,
yeah.
The shoals.
Yeah.
But that to me right now would be my, I'm actually going to be, sorry about that, guys. It's just loud when you do that. I don't care if you hear me cough, but I just don't mean to
get
so loud
eardrums.
In the microphone, blowing your eardrums out. But,
And the water's beautiful there too. I mean,
it's
this
beautiful,
time of year, it's crystal clear.
You'll have a lot of fun, a lot of activity catching all the trout and everything else is there, and then all of a sudden you get this amazing moment. But live in that moment for a while.
Yeah.
Enjoy that. Stop. You know, okay, I've got the monster hooked up. Actually, take that time to experience it.
Absolutely.
That's the hard thing to do, is not to get so involved in landing the fish you forget to enjoy it.
Right.
And because I've done that myself, I've been so involved and I got to get it to the boat that I just didn't take that extra
second to appreciate it.
Yeah, like, oh my god, this happened.
Yeah,
you know. So anyway, getting over to the east side, while we're out there now, I'm hearing pompano over on the Cape Hayes Reef. What else is going on there?
Well, we already did the Cape Hayes Reef.
Okay,
we had to go up the east side now.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was going to go Cape Hayes Reef, the Alligator Creek Reef, middle of the harbor stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, the Cape Hayes Reef, I mean, it's basically been a couple oddball trout, some sheep's head, bonnet head sharks. That's really about all I've heard there. It's been kind of weird.
Not a whole lot through the middle of the harbor right now.
Yeah, the middle of the harbor's been quiet with an oddball silver trout.
I was involved looking some stuff up. But did we go over Boca Grande Pass and the Red Grouper?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about them.
Because that Boca Grande, I was looking some stuff up and otherwise occupied. But the Red Grouper are legal within 9 miles of the shore. So you can have a ball in some of the passes right now and actually catch your legal grouper. And you can do that. I mean, I wouldn't be out there in too small of a John boat. But if you got a, you know, any boat can fish there right now.
Yeah, especially with as calm as it is.
It's nice and calm. And
main thing is make sure you do not cross that 9 mile mark.
No, but I'm just talking about going into Boca Grande Pass and drifting for grouper can be done. You can catch a legal red grouper with a pontoon boat right now.
You do it out of a kayak out there probably.
Yeah, you could probably do it out of a kayak. And so that's kind of special. I wanted to make sure we touched on that a little bit more because that to me was just that's a great revelation. When you get those, and it's very rare, very not common at all to have legal red grouper. Now, occasionally we get quite a few gag grouper legal size there, but for the water to be cool enough to get the red grouper all the way up into the Boca Grande Pass.
And they're not giants. Pass. They're going to be in that just barely over legal, you know, 20 and a half, 21, 22. I haven't heard of anything over 23 inches yet. But
still, on a regular 10 to 20 pound, you know, snook rod, a fight.
That's fun.
That's a fight. That's for a good time. Again, get in the moment and just pause to remember this is why you're there. Don't get so involved in getting the fish to the boat. You forget that that's the moment you were there for.
Absolutely.
That's the time you were there for. Now we're going to jump back over. Anything else in the middle of the harbor?
Nothing really.
You know,
it's been pretty quiet out there.
Yeah, you're really going to get to the edges. And some of the best shoreline fishing is against the sandbar on the east side.
Yeah, that 3 feet of water has been kind of the magic number. On the outside of the bar, there's been the good...
Went from good freezing cold to burning my fingers while I use my lighter. I'm just ridiculous.
Not good.
I don't know what's wrong here lately. Every time I turn around, something's going sideways. Oh,
got to keep you on your toes, I guess.
Yeah, you know, just before...
Keeps it that exceptionally mediocre.
Right. Cooking Thanksgiving dinner, luckily we weren't doing it because our stove... dumped out.
That's terrifying.
So go through Thanksgiving.
I'm glad nothing bad happened because that could have been real bad.
Yeah, all the black smoke and little sparks and flames come out of it. So, but you know, it's just been every time I turn around, something's been going sideways. But
the terrifying part, though, she's a phenomenal cook, so you can't say it was because it was a bad cook that it caught on fire.
Oh no!
I mean, so many people have issues with their ovens, stoves, microwaves because they're usually a pretty poor cook.
Terry is an amazing cook. I mean, I'm
absolutely amazing.
I'm actually exceptionally lucky that way. I went down and got her a stove that I really can't afford, but you know, when she's cooking and she gets in the mood and everything goes, you know, I just nowadays I make sure, you know, I see her start looking at recipe books and I start taking pills.
Yeah.
'Cause I know something good's
absolutely
coming. So anyway, back to the east side, outside the bar, Pompano, we got sea trout,
bonnethead sharks.
Now if you can go cross over the bar and get inside, what's going on?
There's a lot of redfish. The legal size redfish, you know, like we're talking about over in Turtle and Bull, are kind of hanging out away from the bushes, just along the edges. They're not big, but they're at least legal. There's been a few oddball oversized fish over there, but a lot of, you know, that 15 to 22 inch range fish. As you get into the bushes a little bit more, now you start getting into more of the rat reds, you know, that 12 13, 9-inch range. There has been some mangrove snappers still a little bit over there, not as much as we were talking about, you know, a month ago, a month and a half ago.
And some few marauding sheephead going through some of those pockets back there. And no, these are usually bigger fish. I mean, if you're going to catch your 16, 18, 20-inch sheephead, it's probably going to be back on the flats in some little ditch or trough
sand hole or something.
The vast majority of them around the bridges and the pilings and the piers like Placida and Elgin and the 41 and all these other places. But when you find them back on the flats, there's some big fish back there.
Yes.
I mean, a 20-inch sheephead is one heck of a fight.
Oh, my gosh. That's a really quality fish. And in that shallow water, them just getting sideways, it's like fighting a jack almost.
Yeah. And anything else going on the east side? A few snook mixed up. A lot of trout back out in the open flat.
Yeah, that water temperature has been, even though like the daytime's been pretty nice and everything else, it finally got to where it's kind of stabilized. It's still cold. But at least it's not dropping. It's not really getting up anymore. You know, I've been hearing ranges of anywhere from 64 degrees to 68 degrees on the flats on both sides of the harbor. But that's kind of what you wanted. You know, once it gets below that 70 degree mark, that's when your fishing becomes so consistent. Versus, you know, the few weeks prior to this, it's been going from 66 to 74 to 68 to 75, you know, it's been all over the map. So that's why those fish have been so sporadic. Now you're getting to where that water temperature below 70, staying consistent. Fish are really starting to get like more hunkered down in their wintertime position where they should be. That's what's kind of making it pretty cool. Those trout, you know, right there at the mouth of Burnt Store in the channel, Pirate Harbor channel, and up inside by the basin there. Not great quality size fish, but you know, anyone that's got family down or children or women that just really want to learn how to fish,
yeah,
it's the perfect place to go to bend a rod and let them have a good time. I mean, and artificial wise, you know, we've talked about artificials can be intimidating to a lot of people.
Yeah, and to me it's a little more fun than the bait, because with the bait, the fish takes off, and then you fight the fish. But when you're doing a lure, you feel the hit, the strike.
Well, you feel the action of the lure. You're starting to focus on how to work that lure. You've taught me that, how to feel, you know, like a soft plastic. If you're working it right, you can actually feel like the little thump thump of the tail or the curl tails, the way it's kind of vibrating your rod and your line as you're bringing it up. It gets you kind of more in tune, and you start to focus on it. And then when you get whacked, it kind of takes you out of that little trance of paying attention to what the lure is doing to, oh, crap, you know, super excited all at the same time. You know, it's cool.
That's why people spend the money, the expensive rods. Mm-hmm. It's partly about the weight, partly about this, partly about that. But the information telegraphed from the bait or the lure back to your hand, that's where those expensive rods, like Gary Loomis's new rod, the Star Siegis, you know, there's so many of these smoke rods. I mean, and there's so many of these very, very expensive rods. And, I mean, they are expensive, from $150 to $500.
Oh, yeah.
But you're paying for it for information. It's the difference between the information you can get. You don't need an iPhone to talk to somebody on the telephone.
Right.
But the iPhone will show you the weather, it'll show you the temperatures, it gives you a GPS and maps, you get tons of information out of it, where with a regular telephone, you can talk to somebody. We can do the same thing with the less expensive rods, but you do not get the information from it.
No.
It does not, it's very hard to tell the difference between a weed, a fish, a stick, a rock.
Right.
It's getting that information from the lure to your hand so that you can identify what's going on, and that's why you spend the money on some of that tackle. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what you can do with what you can feel, what you can know with the right rod and reel.
Absolutely.
And so when you're throwing lures all day, if somebody comes in and they're throwing a shrimp or white bait or whatever, you need a powerful rod. You need something strong, you know, something durable, but you don't need to really spend a lot of money on it, because it's not, you don't need that information. That rod's going to bend when the fish takes off.
Yeah.
But when you're throwing lures all day, reducing the weight, increasing the information, that's why you're spending that money. It's a real treat. It's just amazing. As you found out, once you have the right rod and reel for the job, it makes a huge difference in the outcome.
For years, I was stubborn and always used, you know, a standard, basically a flipping stick.
Well, 10 to 20 pound class.
And yeah, stiff rod. And you taking me out and showing me with your lighter rods and the different tip actions and actually showing me some of those different lures with how they work and how they feel.
Somebody was talking about it today, and I said, yeah, I used to fish 2-pound tester all the time.
Yeah.
And you remember those days when I was crazy into the super light tackle.
2- and 4-pound test chasing triple tail.
Yeah.
Trout, and redfish. I mean, snug, you were lunatic. Yeah.
So, but it's more than possible. But having the right rod to do it with is everything. The wrong rod and reel with the wrong line on it, matching your setups together to make get what you can do out of it is critical.
Yeah.
And just for general information, well, let's go on to Alligator Creek. A lot of trout in there, some popping them out by the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Some jacks been moving in and out of there. Some fairly decent size jacks, too. Not giants, but pretty good size. Should be a special order, I think. Or is it for you?
I don't know. It just says... I'll open it and find out when the show's over.
Oh, okay. Just looks like Costas.
But no, it's
got
not.
Handwriting on it,
no,
I see.
I think it's rod tips.
Oh, okay.
When he handed it to me, it's like, gee whiz.
It's a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Run! Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I've delayed the show so much that the I'm starting to get, you know.
Bomb threats,
yes. But Alligator Creek.
Alligator Creek, I mean, we got the little trout, few bigger trout, but mostly little stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The jacks have been moving in and out of there. The jacks have been assorted sizes literally from 2 pounds to some of them been up there in like that 8- and 10-pound range, especially when you get up there towards the Burnt Store Isles canals.
Yeah, back by the old locks.
There's been some pretty quality fish over in there. A few incidental snook. They've been weird. I've had a couple guys catching some bigger redfish in some of those deeper little cuts that are back there. The deep holes, the 6-, 8-, and 10-foot drop-offs right. That are back in there.
Now,
but not numbers.
Okay. Coming up around the skating rink, we got some redfish back in there. Not much else. I know there's some smaller snook in there. Getting around Mangrove Point, Whorehouse Point, again, snook and redfish, some trout outside of the bar.
Right.
But getting up into Ponce Park and the PGI canals, what's going on up there?
Ponce has been a little hit or miss just because they got done, or I don't even know if they're done yet with dredging it. They've been getting a few sheep's head, oddball trout, some mangrove snapper, but once you get up inside, there's been some sporadic black drum, some tarpon, quite a few mangrove snapper, not like it was, you know, a month ago, but good. Sheep's head are starting to move in there in fairly good numbers. But Bass Inlet and Colony Point, both those spots, that first couple hundred yards, been really incredible fishing. Pompano, sheep's head, snapper, snook, redfish. I mean, just kind of the whole gamut. Not great numbers, but definitely quality stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to drop back into the Gulf for a bit. Now, in St. Petersburg, the water temp is 66 degrees, and in Naples, it's 71. So if you're going to go out in the Gulf and look for king mackerel, stuff like that, head out and then go south. It's a little too cold north. 68 to 72 is prime king mackerel temperatures.
Right.
And we're right between that. Usually we you can split the difference 66 to 71. So, you know, 71.2 in Naples. So that's going to put us in that 68, 69 degree water temp.
Yeah.
And which is prime. And so, but if I'm going to look for king mackerel right now, even the tuna and stuff, I'm going out, I'm going to go south. I'm going to go south or southwest and look for my trolling fish that way. This is not the time to go out and go north. This is the time to get south or southwest.
If I were doing it, I'd personally be running down there towards like the Captiva Blue Hole, the Mohawk.
Right. Anything a little south of us, you're going to gain that couple of degrees of water temperature as you go south. And that's going to put you into quite a bit better fishing.
Yeah.
And let's touch on freshwater here for a minute. What's been going on around the area?
Bass fishing's been sick.
It's good.
Been real good.
Real good.
Real good. Gulf Cove, been some really good quality bass back in there. Like,
if
I've been
you
hearing of some like 5- and 6-pounders.
Yeah, go on the maps of where to go fishing on Fishing Frank's, where to go fishing maps, and then scroll down and... I don't know if I've got it. I'm trying to look. I've got it under South Gulf Cove. Okay. in South Gulf Cove, look for the Butterford ramp under maps of top of the page. Click where to go fishing maps, and then scroll down. You're going to go past Elgin, Pine Island, and all that, Placida, and you're going to come up to South Gulf Cove. And the one on top, when you put in at that ramp, go to the right. It will take you. You need a freshwater fishing license to do this, guys. This is not a saltwater license event. You have to have freshwater to do this. Put in to Butterford and go to the right and west, right, whatever. And once you get back closer to 771 and beyond, you're going to get into some great bass fishing back in there.
Absolutely.
And there's snook to be caught there, too.
Snook. Some redfish and
little tarpon. So you're not just bass fishing. Once you get back into this area, you've got such a broad mixture of fish. And use your bass tackle, the bass lures, the rods, do all that.
Yeah.
But be expecting almost anything.
Absolutely.
And but then over here in Port Charlotte, back off of the 9 Mile of Cocoa Plum, you've got some decent panfish as well as bass fishing.
Yeah, there's been some good bass, some crappie. There's been Buster must be out there.
Is he out there?
He just left, but the rest of the nets are up there.
Okay, but he didn't stay. I was gonna have him on the show.
Yeah,
see if you
took off the ramp.
Oh, okay. We just got a shipment of cracker nets and Calusa nets and all that. So, nice cast nets.
Real nice.
So
The crappie fishing in like the Port Charlotte canals this year has been off.
Yeah.
I've been getting a lot of mixed reports on them. The guys that are finding them are doing well on them, but they're not in their usual spots.
Really?
And the only thing I can figure is all this bridge work that they're replacing all these culverts along 41 has changed a lot of that water flow.
Well, they are actually changing the water flow.
Talking to Greg this morning, he said his one pepper tree that he loves to always fish, right, it's usually 3.5 feet. He said it's 2.5 feet now. Always. It hasn't budged any more than 2.5 feet.
What they're trying to do is several of the canals got all blocked up with algaes, and they ended up deading. So they're changing the way the water flows through the canals now to provide more water flow to some of the more stagnant canals. Mm-hmm. And so they're having to change all the bridges on 41 to accommodate additional water flows in the summer. So, yeah, it's going to be a weird year, because it's like I was talking about Boca Raton Pass. And once they quit dredging the shipping lane and the pass out there, and no more maintenance dredging, doesn't mean the fishing is going to get better or worse. It's going to mean it's going to be different. And the same thing in the canals now. The fishing, it's going to take a while for anybody to get used to it, because nothing's like it was a year ago.
Absolutely.
And Boca Raton Pass is the same way. The tarpon are going to be there or not be there. They're going to stay longer. They're going to leave quicker. Each year, it's going to change.
Absolutely.
And with these canals, it's going to be 3 or 4 years for them to settle back in, because they were done in the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, in the 40s and 50s, these canals were dug, and they were basically the same for decades.
Yeah.
And now they've changed it. So
yeah.
Now it's going to take a bit. And it's not going to be, okay, where are they this year? They're going to be where they are this year. They might be in a different place next year. When you change the way the water flows, the way it runs, everything changes.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be like this for 2-3 years. It's going to take at least 3 to 5 years for things to settle down in those canals before the fish can figure out, okay, this is a good spot, and we're going to spawn here, or we're going to hang out here or there.
Yeah.
And I'll be
curious to see, because, I mean, right now, December is usually the pre-spawn month for bass everywhere.
In South Florida,
yeah, sorry. Yes. I'm talking about here.
Okay.
Down south.
Yes.
Not where I live.
Yeah. Okay. So the pre-spawn time.
It's usually
time.
A pre-spawn time.
Right.
So you should probably, you know, like Trafford, Okeechobee, the Kissimmee with the chain of lakes up there. You're probably going to start to hear some fish going into the pre-spawn modes up there. But down here, I'm going to be real curious with that water flow change, what it's going to do to some of these fish. It'll be kind of interesting. You know, 9 Mile Canal is still 9 Mile Canal. They haven't changed anything over there really yet.
No, they're just changing where the outflow from that comes.
Right.
And so the canal itself is staying the same, but I think they're going to add more emptying spots in it.
Right.
And they're adding a lot of the canals, the closer you get to 41, the more radical the changes will be.
Right.
The further away from 41 you get, the less radical the changes will be.
Yeah, especially, you know, like, I mean, the noticeable one is going to be like that canal right there on Midway, closest to 41, right at that little curve.
Yeah.
That one's changed drastically. I mean, I looked at it a couple weeks ago, and there's not nearly the duckweed there or the water hyacinth that there usually used to be.
There's more water moving.
Yep, exactly. As you get further on, though, closer to veterans and stuff like that, those are still okay, but you're definitely seeing the changes. But like you said,
they're going to empty more.
The closer you get to 41, the more
they're trying to move drastic. More water, and it's going to take its toll on everything. The fishing will stay. There'll still be the same amount of fish, or even more in some cases, but
it's going to take a while to kind of figure out a pattern.
It's going to be figuring it out. And then they got to see if what they did worked. Because,
right.
You know, what man does. The best way to hear God laugh, tell him your plans.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I'm gonna
this is what we're
going to
do, because this is what's going to happen. And then you can hear God laugh. Yes, that is the best way to make God laugh, is tell him your plans.
Yeah.
So, anyway, anything else we need to go over?
Not that I can think of. You know, main thing I want to say is thanks to everyone that came to your party. Thank you for having the party.
Yeah.
Thank you
Have
for everything.
A holly jolly Christmas.
Enjoy your friends. Enjoy your family. I mean, we'll probably get another report in before Christmas comes.
Oh yeah, we're gonna be doing several more, and I'm gonna be on the phone. I'm back to work again, so I'm gonna be here pretty much every day next week and for a while up through the season. For the rest of the season, I'm not planning on taking any more time off. Tried to get a little bit of time off before things got nuts, because it was so cold. We were busy with Christmas shoppers, but not a lot of the actual people going fishing. And
correct.
Now the weather's kind of stabilized a little bit, and it's time for me to get back to work and kind of enjoying being the boss a little bit here.
It's about time.
Hire a couple of people, let them do a little bit of the work.
It's about time.
I've taken a little bit of time off. I've got
you deserve
teach,
it.
Got to teach somebody how to do these radio shows so that we can get more of them up.
Right.
And that's my goal, is to get more shows on the air. So we're
well,
trying, guys.
You're the boss. All you have to do is just say, hey, take care of this out on the floor, and grab somebody and drag them back here and start talking.
Yeah, well, I got my phone now, and I got the phone hooked up, and I've got three or four ways for talking to people on air.
Well, that'll
phone,
be entertaining. So. Frank's back in the office talking to himself again.
Yeah. I remember many of those days, talking to myself, crying, you know, laughing, you know, yeah. Okay, but anyway.
Well, now take down your fishing pole.
Just make you smile.
It does.
It really does.
Doesn't matter what kind your mood is. This is good stuff right here.
But don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones. And mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade. Setting in the shade.
It's hard to believe he's gone.
Weather is hot.
You know.
Whether it's cool,
since I was a little kid, you know,
oh, what a spot.
Literally grew up with
him. Like yeah. A fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
I think since I was a little kid, I don't think there was hardly any point in time he wasn't on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the different shows he did, and when I was young, the movies, and then once, you know, Andy Griffith show came out, then he was, I mean, pretty much I was on the air until...
Yeah, he stayed steady in some kind of TV program
something,
or an oddball movie here and there.
All my life, yeah. So,
yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. This is Fish and Frank in the chair, and that's Robert in the chair across from me, and we will talk to you soon.
Like it.
Bye, guys.